Let's go. Okay, good morning, Melbourne. Good morning, Australia, and good day or evening to all our international listeners too. I'm Helen Taylor. Welcome to my show, Inspired Radio. I'm here with you every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Melbourne, Australia time, and Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central Time for Canada and US for conversations and stories to inspire you. This is the BBS Radio TV platform, and we're going live to over 200 outlets worldwide. Before I get started, sponsors. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I just have a big heartfelt thank you to all of you. Inspired Radio is all about change, getting uncomfortable and shaking up the status quo. We are breaking free from limiting systems and limiting lives and embracing our infinite potential. My guests are here to tell their story because storytelling is creating a new world. So let me introduce you to today's guest. It's Melbourne filmmaker, writer, actor, producer, director, and let me throw in there singer, Paul Moder. A bold voice in Australia's independent film scene for more than 35 years. Through acting, special effects work, and producing, amongst other things, Paul's work has always pushed into challenging territory. This includes his project, The Wasp Files podcast, which is exploring the Port Arthur massacre and the unanswered questions surrounding what happened there. Paul continues that fearless approach to storytelling and investigation. And we haven't even mentioned his books yet. So let's get started. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Welcome.
Wow. I loved throwing singer in the midst of everything else that you are. Filmmaker, writer, actor, producer, director, and singer. How did singer get thrown in amongst all of that?
Like most of my explorations into the artistic field, just came about through very normal and pedestrian means. I've spent many years being a bouncer, and I used to stand on the door singing at the top of my lungs out into the street, and I found my blues voice. I've got a voice like gravel and glue, very calm way. So I've written an entire blues album, which I'm recording at the moment. I can't play a musical instrument, but I can sing and songwrite like a demon. So yet another little string to the bow. I just love singing. So yeah, down and
Fabulous.
dirty blues.
Fabulous. Let me say something, right? We spoke before we got started here. We spoke a few days ago just to connect. And I wrote this about you. I've spoken with him briefly, and this is what I discovered. He's a deep thinker and he has a kind and generous heart. He's so easy to talk with, and there's an openness immediately, which is endearing, but you can also feel this formidable punch. This power in the background. And that's what I'd like to know about. What is that? It's like, when I look at your movies that you've been in, when I look at the books that you've written, it's like it's all about thrillers and horror and darkness and that kind of, side of life. So what is this formidable kind of punch in the background of you that I'm feeling?
What drives most people? Pain, loss, betrayal, need, hope, all of my art, whether it's writing, filmmaking, even performance, follows the creed forma veritas atrocitas, beauty, truth, horror. The notion that we all have to go through a journey of darkness and horror to find the truth about life and about ourselves, and then we can find redemption, salvation, and appreciate beauty. I think one journey, so I have a very healthy relationship with my dark side, but there is always redemption, light, laughter, and love, however hard fought and won.
Beauty, truth, and what?
Horror. Forma veritas atrocitus, the Latin
That
form
before.
of that, which I espoused in a series of very dark cabaret shows I did called Atrocitus, where I had like an ageless seer, an MC who took people through this journey. And yeah, they were very dark cabaret shows that I did when I owned a cabaret club. And we had about five audience members fainting in the audience and people building. They were very deep psychological pieces of work, but very poignant and very lyrical and poetic in many ways.
I see, like there's, yeah, okay, what you're saying there is what I'm seeing when I looked at the your book. Which one is it? My Shadow Falls Before Me, right? It's like you're confrontational. It's incredibly confrontational. Like the themes of the movies you've been in, the themes of your book, and even your cabaret show, by the sounds of it, like we're, you know, it's like this is the stuff people try to avoid. This is what they circumvent their whole lives, not wanting to actually see the darkness or the horror that's either around them or in their lives. And I can't even look at the cover of that book without sort of going, ah, it, you know, giving me this reaction.
I've always said one of the main characters that I played in Atrocity says that hell is the other side of the mirror, but we rarely like what we see when we gaze into it. And I don't have that problem. Everyone needs to be able to look in the mirror and see into the darkest corners of their lives and their souls and acknowledge that we all have that side, but we all try to aspire to the light. It's a constant battle for our souls. We certainly are aware of that with the to change tangent a little bit with the current state of Australia and what's going on around the world in terms of what is being imposed upon people by the so-called benevolent people that run us and lead us. They are crushing our spirit. We are in a fight for our very life and for our souls.
Yes, we are. And I see that as I'm looking at your history, you've been an integral part in revealing things ahead of time. That's what I see you've been doing. You've been saying, hey, people, look at this. Look at it in yourselves and look at it straight in the face, because look what's coming now, 35 years after you've been revealing all of this stuff. Now it's right in our faces.
Yeah, it's interesting. Specifically, even talking about a lot of the darker attributes of life that the powers that be are very quick to label as being conspiracy theorists. And now the running joke is that, well, conspiracies become fact. People are referring to George Orwell's 1984 and say, well, welcome, here we are. So you become very quickly aware that once you peer behind the curtain, you can't unsee what you've seen. And a lot of people are now being courageous enough to take that journey to question the status quo of things, to question their reality, their perspective on life in general. I think a lot of people are aware that you go out into life with this bright sort of, the world is my oyster, what's over the horizon attitude, and you get the stuffing kicked out of you in many ways, sometimes with things that you're not even anticipating or aware of. And then you very quickly find out that life is pain, that there is a lot of sacrifice that we all have to go through. And I personally think that we have to embrace that. The character of Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now said that you must make a friend of horror and darkness, because if you don't, they are an enemy to be truly feared. So that's
Agree.
part of it. We have to save
Agree.
our souls.
Because if we're battling with fight with light with darkness outside of ourselves, we've got a fight going on inside of ourselves as well.
Absolutely. Everybody does, whether they want care to admit it or not.
So it's time to take notice, sit up and take notice of what's really going on out there.
I think that's the start of it. I would suggest that we as species, as people, we need to understand our own power. We need to know that we have power, and it goes beyond having the latest iPhone or flashy toys. It's within you to have that spirit, to have the guts, the steel to fight life where it needs to be fought, but also to stand up and be aware that you are the engine of your own regeneration, renewal, and achievement. And that too many people will be fooled into joining this side or that side or this group or that group. And that's all been engineered. The division, the current division, horrific division that we see, where we're literally fighting each other on the streets, has been engineered. It's the oldest trick in the book: divide and conquer. They're all divided. We need to understand that we can stand alone as our own individual self.
So I agree with what you're saying there. We either get caught up in the programming that's being put out in front of us, or we start to recognize that we are the supreme being on this planet. We are an incredible power, an incredible light or force. And if we identify with that, we can overcome a lot of things.
We're a flawed species. I mean, that goes without saying. But it's more about just understanding that it's belief is very powerful. Belief can change anything. And I'm a very deeply spiritual person. I'm not affiliated with any institutionalized religion. But not to get too Nietzschean at this early start of the morning, but you have to look inside yourself. You have to know who you are. You have to know your weaknesses, your strengths, and self-empower. But yeah, understand that there's a pretty nasty game going on, that the people that rule the world are not exactly paragons of virtue, and nor do they have our best interests at heart. We just have to be the best people that we can be to everyone. I wish I could wrap my arms around the big wide world and give it a hug. I can't. There's the way the world should be, there's the way the world is.
That's
So
what I was just thinking myself. I was thinking that, a really good remedy is just look evil in the face and give it a hug. Give it a hug and tell it how much you love it and then move on.
well, I also like to follow General Mad Dog Mattis's creed, which is smile, be polite, and have a plan to kill everyone you meet. You got to laugh as well. I always say you've
Oh,
got to laugh
yes,
when
you
you're
do.
great.
Yes, you
I
do.
try not to take everything too seriously, despite my grave disposition at times. I've done a lot of comedy, so yeah, I do like laughter and light and love, and certainly making
There's the balance. There's the balance. Okay. Because as I was looking at those movies and the books, it was like thrillers and horror were just so much a theme through all of that. Why? Tell me about the 10-year-old Paul. Like, did he know he was on this trajectory?
fairly early on, yes. I used to hand in my homework at school when I was a kid in primary school, and it would do the job that was required. But the teachers were noticing that I would festoon the outside of the essay or assignment with pictures of like ghosts and people being hung and monsters and stuff, and they were concerned enough to contact my parents. And my parents took me to a psychologist who said, look, he's just really, really creative. Have some kind of, I guess, portal into a dark side of life at a very early age, a fascination with things. But I was a happy, innocent little green-eared kid, and I used to, make people laugh and stuff. And no, just are our natures developed, or are we born with them?
Don't
I
know.
often say, with my latter forays into the creative field, that it's my ghosts that push the pen on my books. We're all empty vessels. It's our ghosts who make us who we are.
I'm really happy that your parents found a really kind of open-minded psychologist too, who saw it for what it was, right? Because he could have labeled you with a lot of different things, but you are a creative force, and you've been channeling that energy your whole life.
I think you have to. The saddest fact is that some people just don't have the means to express themselves. Contrite, but to be able to express yourself, whether it's going nuts on the dance floor at the local wedding, or being having a creative outlet, or drinking yourself into oblivion so that you can let go of your control. People need to be able to express themselves. They also need to be heard. They need people to look at them and say, I see you as an individual. I see who you are. I understand who you are. A lot of people don't get that. And so, unfortunately, that need for expression becomes destructive. And when it's taken to an extreme, you'll have people fly planes into major skyscrapers to say, look at me, here I am.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Because it's also part of why I started a radio show. Initially, it was about just giving men and women a voice, especially for the last 6 years here in Australia of what everyone's been through. I wanted people to be able to talk about and know that their story, no matter how simple they thought it was actually really valuable and important for other people to hear. And it's turned into more than that since then. But here in Australia, we went through a hell of a lot of stuff. And what you've been looking at with Port Arthur is just a part of the cog that was steering towards this, wasn't it?
Just so everyone knows, I fell into the WAS files. My original intention was to make a film about the Port Arthur massacre, which hadn't been touched in decades. So I didn't intend to create a podcast called the WAS files. I started to research, the tragedy, which at the time I thought was what everyone else knew, that Martin Bryant had got high-powered semi-automatic rifles and gone down to Port Arthur and shot the place up. But I started to research, as any good writer does, and then discovered very quickly that the story just had a lot of inconclusive aspects to it, unanswered questions, things that didn't add up, which made it virtually impossible for me to write the script. So I started searching for answers. And then I very quickly found out, after talking to people, direct survivors from Port Arthur, police, first responders, that people have a story to tell, and that they didn't have the chance to tell that story because there was no open trial, no coronial inquest, no royal commission. And all these people, sometimes with alternate narratives about Port Arthur, were never given their say in court or in the media as well, in the mainstream media. Some of these are very good friends of mine, one of whom took a bullet in the throat on the day and survived. Remarkable man. And his testimony and statement was that the person who shot him was not Martin Bryant. And I asked him, "Are you sure?" He said, "100%." Now, this person is a remarkably observant man. We've become good friends, but he's never had his say. And I despise tokenism. One of the main thrusts of the WAS files with Port Arthur is, as you say, give people their say. Let them tell their story.
What's
And I'm
tokenism?
not a. Go on, sorry.
What's tokenism?
Tokenism is just that sort of notion where it's almost like a platitude to be able to give deference to people that have lost. And there seems to be, in some cases, it's sincere, but in others, it just seems to be a bit of a whitewash. I do see that a lot with the way the government treats people who have gone through trauma. That was certainly the case with Port Arthur. I don't, of course, besmirch having a Memorial Day to every 28th of April to commemorate the tragedy of Port Arthur massacre, but it was interesting to me that they put out a little edict, the planning committee, saying that they had contacted everyone who was associated on the day and who were there. And invited them to attend the memorial. That was the 30-year memorial. This 28th of April just passed, but my friends didn't get that invitation, and they were there on the day too. They lost people. Their loss was profound. They were not invited to attend, and that to me is a form of tokenism, where we'll just make all the right appearances to do the right thing by the people who lost. But they didn't.
So what did you uncover? So you went to do, to start writing about the event. What did you uncover?
In essence, without going to a huge amount of detail, that there were glaring discrepancies with the official narrative. There were certainly a lot of legal improprieties in relation to the way that the prosecution was run. The inclusion of evidence that would have been considered to be exculpatory evidence, which is contrary to a previous determination. Basically, evidence that comes forward that says, hang on, this is not the way it went down. We've got an alternate witness testimony over here. So I found that a lot of things didn't add up, and there also seemed to be a lot of indications that there were other parties involved, third parties. Now, before anyone, of course, leaps to the obvious, which is, the first thing they do is demonize people and say, "Oh, look, it's you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a tinfoil hat wearer, you're a crook." I absolutely despise those terms.
That's for anybody that tries to question something.
Sure, and I've always said there is nothing wrong with asking questions,
Sure.
particularly in the absence of information. A lot of people don't know that the hard evidence of Port Arthur had been locked down initially by the Hobart Supreme Court for 30 years, which had expired on the 28th of April this year. But in 2018, I discovered that the Tasmanian Archives Heritage Office had been charged with providing all the information, getting all the information from the authorities and locking it down, digitizing it, locking it down under the highest restrictive category, E75, Police Chief Commissioner's Eyes Only, for a further 75 years.
Wow.
So I discovered to my shock that with a total of 105 combined years of suppression of any of the hard evidence and investigation into Port Arthur, you, me, and everyone else associated will be dead before that information is ever
Yeah.
released. Or if Martin has been convicted and sentenced to the rest of his life, why can't we, from an educational historical point of view, access this information
Yes.
locked away?
Wow. And I would say that most people listening don't even know that. I didn't know that.
The most heartening thing that I get from a lot of the comments on the WASP files is when people say, "I didn't know that." And my thoughts are, why didn't they know?
Why didn't they
We
know?
have a mainstream media who should,
Absolutely.
and government who should provide these answers. People often forget, it's contrite to say, they work for us, not the other way around. But
Yes.
that's not the case. It's a
Oh.
need-to-know basis, and we don't need to know.
So what was going on, right? So this whole thing was set up in some way, shape, or form, and operated very differently to what all of us here in the country were told, what was revealed to us. Something else was going on. Have you discovered what else was going on? Why did this happen?
Look, they're very complex questions. I firstly, certainly want to provide a caveat that I don't determine 100% that this didn't go down, that Martin Bryant wasn't involved. Martin Bryant certainly was involved. He was arrested at Seascape Cottage, which was the bed and breakfast that where the siege had taken place after the initial shooting had taken place at the Port Arthur historic site. So it's more about me trying to dig for the answers. And what I came up with was that there is certainly, in my opinion, a dearth of circumstantial evidence, some of it quite compelling, that there were other parties involved and that these possibly were either rogue tactical police, aspects of our intelligence agencies, and perhaps foreign influence as well. And I know it's cloak and dagger and mysterious, but anyone who wants to do their research into Port Arthur will very quickly discover that there are a lot of indications of this that just seem to suggest that something much larger was going on, and that Martin was classic patsy who was set up to take the fall. So discount whatsoever that he may not have been capable and or culpable of the Port Arthur massacre. But it seems to be a deliberate attempt to cover things up. All of this is covered in the WASP files. We can talk about any aspect, but with time of the essence.
Absolutely. And I will put a link here for everybody as well to your website, but also to the WASP files are all on YouTube, aren't they?
Yes, there's many episodes, and I delve individually into all the varying aspects of the case and provide backup evidence, witness statements, photographs, video, so on, to support that case. You don't have to believe what I say. I'm not, the final say on what's happened at Port Arthur, but I do take a very reasoned, civil, and scientific approach to it. I don't consider myself an activist or a social media influencer or anything like that. I could care less about the popularity. It's a very torturous journey that's a thorn in my side, but I felt that I had enough information to be able to say Australians need to know what they don't know about the Port Arthur massacre, and that's what the Wash Files is all about.
And I think that you're playing a piece in a bigger puzzle because a lot of people are being the researcher and the investigator these days and asking people to rethink what they think they know.
I think that's vital, particularly if you look at any major event in Australian history that has become a signpost or a marker, as I like to call it, for the direction of our country. And I think most people are looking around going, what happened to the lucky country? What happened with all these things that suddenly our government is stripping away our rights piecemeal? We're supposedly a democracy with freedom of speech, freedom of movement. You know, in Victoria, where I live, we had the longest lockdown in world history over COVID. And I'll never forget the draconian, brutal policing of that pandemic, where masks were being forced onto people. Riot police were just, you know, marching through the Victoria market. Helicopters were circling public parks to keep an eye on people distancing. It was horrendous. And
It was
Australia has gone
awful.
down a very dangerous road.
It was horrifying. I still, when I hear a helicopter now, because I'm in Victoria as well with you, I still react. I can feel this nervousness rise whenever I hear a helicopter because of the lockdowns and the constant helicopters going overhead all the time. And you know, I it made me have greater respect for people in war zones and things like that because we only got a little taste of it.
It was, in my opinion, it was a total overreaction. We certainly know in hindsight, and a lot of the sort of naysayers at the time who were quite vitriolic on people like myself who didn't want to wear a mask, and I certainly haven't been vaccinated. You know, I lost almost friendships over it. And now the information is coming out. Anthony Fauci's under very serious investigation. There are calls for him to be imprisoned for his connection with the vaccines and the scientific, shall we say, re-engineering of the SARS virus that supposedly escaped from a lab. So all of that aside, it just seemed to me that there was once again this agenda to create the old adage of fear, control, fear, control. Well, the other one is the Hegelian dialectic, which is problem, reaction, solution.
Solution.
Oh, we've got this terrible pandemic. The reaction is shock, horror. My God, we're going to die. And then the government benevolently steps in and says, right, we're going to implement all of these procedures here to control the situation, to make you safe. And then we are compliant. And then we find out to our detriment that there were some very unsavory aspects to that control. We lost a lot of people. The loss from the COVID lockdowns, loss of businesses, broken marriages, depression, suicide, increased domestic and sexual abuse at home, lost friendships, education of our children, in my opinion, created a far greater negative output from the virus than the government measures to control it.
By design. And that's why I was asking you about, Port Arthur. Like, what was there an agenda behind there? Because if there were other elements of, policing and like ASIO or CIA or other elements involved, why? What was there an agenda for? Because I think post the situation, it was about gun control.
I've actually always said that that's far too simple a motive. Most people comment and say, yep, they did Port Arthur so they could take the guns off us. Anyone who studies history, and if you don't, you should, going back centuries, will discover that the oldest motivators in the book are power, money, influence, and control. That there is always people that benefit from a tragic outcome. I think the famous saying is never let a tragedy go to waste. And whether that's war with the machinations of the industrial military complex, war makes profit for a lot of those kind of entities. There is always an issue where people will do the utmost evil to the lesser of us, so to speak, for those kind of reasons: power, money, influence, and control. Even with things like 9/11, you had a drastic increase in the powers of the government to be able to seize offshore funding,
Yes.
hold people without charge for longer periods of time,
Yep.
increase surveillance, being able to, spy on people's social media. Everywhere you look now, there's CCTV cameras. The control mechanisms that are put in place after a major traumatic event are then justified because they say, well, because of this, we need to make you safer. But then we find that, some of those mechanisms are used to control us.
Yes.
And that's when you start to say, hang on, I don't think this is in my best interest. There's another agenda here. You don't have to think that Port Arthur was necessarily a conspiracy. That's up to you. I will say, do your research.
Yes.
Look into any event and then look at the people who benefit from that and look at the fundamental change
Yep.
to the society you're in. Look at Australia now. Are our governments paragons of virtue? Are they transparent? Do they adhere to freedom of information requests? Do they provide information? The Bondi attacks, which were the second major gun crime that occurred in Australia since Port Arthur. We just had the Royal Commission, and astoundingly, the report was that that ASIO and the police and the government had nothing to answer for, that they followed the correct procedures. And
Yes.
that is just an outrageous, ridiculous statement, considering that one of the shooters and alleged shooters, Naveed, was on an ASIO watch list for years, since 2019, and his father was permitted to own a firearms license. Now, I'm a firearm owner. As a fit and proper person, you can only own a firearm if you're a fit and proper person, and they can snatch that right away from you in an instant. But here we have someone on a watch list whose father was able to purchase firearms and then took trips to known terrorist training hotspots. But of course, the government was not to blame. The report mentioned firearms 150 times, and they barely mentioned the threat of radical Islamic terrorism. And we can see that Albanese, our prime minister, has been very averse to mentioning those terms. Instead, he's labeling right-wing extremists. Am I the only one that's blind here?
I've just been watching our politicians for years now behaving like my teenage sons used to behave. The biggest catch cry for everything now is it wasn't me. It wasn't me. You're just saying that the police and, all the different levels of government are saying, for Bondi, it wasn't us. It wasn't us. We just did what we needed to do. It's like nobody wants to take any responsibility for anything anymore.
I'll go you one further. I think a lot of we rail against our politicians, say, oh, he's an idiot, he's a fool. They're very smart. They're puppets. It's not what they try to abrogate responsibility. They're told what to do. They're shills. They are puppets, and there is, in my opinion, their place there to introduce a new, if you want to call it a new world order or a great reset, which is not a conspiracy term, it's actually publicly known, that they want to change the world. And part of that is to implement agendas that will control us. Supposedly for this benevolent, utopian, wonderful, brave new world. But unfortunately, the side aspect of that is to undermine and destroy a lot of the things that make us individuals. Sovereignty, national pride, individual worth of our nations, and also our freedoms. Our ability to, free speech is free speech. Put all these little clauses and restrictions on it. You do that, you don't have free speech.
No.
You can't do this, you can't do that. And it just reaches a point where, of course, the philosophical argument is it just total chaos and anarchy, or do we have control? Some measure of control, but it's a very slippery slope that Australia is going down, particularly when you consider there are major foreign interests that are dictating Australian governance
Yep.
and dictating our culture and the way we live negatively.
Most people don't understand that that's happened, and that's why I'm talking to you today too. You're revealing that there's a different way of looking at Port Arthur, amongst other things, right? You're asking people to not just look at the one narrative, to start to look at it from different dimensions or different angles, because there was more going on. And people are starting to open up and see that and see, kind of from different angles what's happening in the world. But there's still a sticking point. A lot of people don't. They can't understand how, someone like you or I, we would not do a lot of these things to another human being. People are struggling to understand that people can be bought and sold or coerced into behaving for their own benefit or for the benefit of somebody who's paying them or above them. It's really different. It's difficult to understand that there is such evil. Or is it evil, or is it just such selfishness that's running at higher levels of our society?
I think it goes back to what I was saying, is that people don't like to look in the mirror. They don't like to see what they see reflected back at them. It's too easy to say, oh, no, I've got my little construct world and I don't want to know what's outside of that. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with people that just want to live their life, do what they need to do, work, try and, build a home, raise a family. All of those are vital aspects. It's just that they sometimes do that at the behest of looking at the agendas that are placed upon them that are starting to put those pressures on. I can't believe the amount of pressure ordinary everyday families are facing now. They build a very careful construct and say, right, I've got it going on. And then the rules keep changing, the goalposts are moving, and people are the they're just being robbed of certainty. The
Well,
one thing
when
that
you've
took
got
away.
people stressed and doing a million things and juggling all these balls in the air, they can't think critically.
I think we're all just playing, trying to play catch up just to be able to pay bills and know that our kids will go to school and there'll be a future for them. It's just the one thing they robbed us from with the whole COVID lockdown was surety and certainty. Certainty that you will have a job, that your kids will be able to go to school, that you'll be able to pay your mortgage. And I was being frontline security during that lockdown, and I saw what happened to people psychologically. They lost their shit over toilet paper. I saw people fighting in the supermarkets, and I thought, this is a very interesting experiment to see what you can do when you take away that veneer of control that people think they have over their own lives. And people just went nuts. They went a bit crazy. And in my opinion, it was an experiment we all failed.
A majority did. Yes, they did. But let me ask you this. In, terror, thrillers, horror has been a theme of all sorts of things that you've been doing for decades now. Have you met evil? Have you met and looked in the face of evil people?
I have, yes.
What does it look like?
I wouldn't say that it's not like meeting Dr. Evil. Sometimes the people that you have to watch are the ones that smile all the time. I do have an ability. I look into people's eyes. If I put my lasers on them, I can usually divine the nature of their soul. Eyes tell you a lot. When people smile, if their smile doesn't touch their eyes, you know that. Things going on there. But I also believe that you have to once again look into yourself. I won't say I'm a good person by any stretch of the imagination. There is another side to me, as there is to most people. As a species, we are flawed. We have our selfishness, we have our deceit. I think the only thing I can do is be accept that, acknowledge that within myself. Try to be a better person and know that when the devil's whispering in your ear, and inevitably your voice somehow seems to sound like Jack Nicholson, like and steal that extra cookie and no one's gonna know. It's just, you just have to acknowledge that within yourself. Try and be a good person. I played a priest in these dark cabaret shows, a very searing fallen priest, and that is another theme in some of my books. The point is that we are all flawed, that you can't hold people up on a pedestal and say, "Oh, I'm good, and I've got everything great, and I don't have any dark urges," and that's just not true. We know that's the case. It's just that people aren't courageous enough to follow that. Or a famous US novelist, Erica Jong, wrote that everyone has a talent. What is rare is the courage to follow that talent to the dark place that it leads. And it doesn't mean that life is all grim death. I have children. I have a lot of laughter and love. I've got my big doggies. I'm an ordinary person in many regards, but I like to be a well-rounded person, and I know my demons very well. And sometimes they get off the leash and they bite, but thank God for the artistic expression. My books, my films, my performances, even my blues albums are tinged with a little touch of the devil. Getting a little bit away from Port Arthur, aren't we?
I don't mind. I told you I wanted to talk about you, right? I don't mind at all. Port Arthur is a part of you, but there's much, much more. Like I said in my little wrap up of what I tuned into when I spoke to you, there's much, much more to you, a lot of dimension. Tell me about the illegal dog fighting. How the hell did you get into writing My Shadow Falls Before Me? Because I noticed that you just said it was really distressing to write. So why'd you write it?
I love dogs. I've got a 70-kilo Great Dane, and I'm about to get another doggy, and they're just eating everything in the house. I'm down to one pillow. I guess when I write, I have a concept, and then I just begin to write. And this book was very much about hard-won redemption and salvation after betrayal and loss, and someone who had fooled themselves into thinking that they were doing the right thing and then had that brutally snatched away from them, but refused to acknowledge that it was their fault. So the book is about this young American college student who discovers illegal dog fighting in Mexico and then starts to have a sort of a nighttime activity. Training dogs to brutally fight and kill each other. And he makes a lot of money out of that. And he uses that to fund a lovely lifestyle. And he meets a young woman and they have a child. And he's got this day life that's, but he's also got a side. And he runs into a very nefarious character called the Spaniard. And there's a betrayal there. And the Spaniard unleashes the dog into his home and it kills his child. And his whole world just collapses. Very, very hard for me to write because I had to research what they do to dogs to get them to fight each other to the death. And so, yeah, it was very uncomfortable to write, but there is redemption in that story right at the end, as with all of my
As with
stories.
all of them, absolutely. They all have a happy ending. But you said something then, which was making me think about our Australian politicians and our, the levels of leadership above us doing the right thing.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about you, but I think there's going to be a few people and perhaps a few dogs peeing on Daniel Andrews' statue.
Yes,
I
I've
give
just
that
heard about
statue
that.
48 hours before somebody comes and does something to it. Look, our politicians, I guess you could say, good luck to them. They're smart enough or measly enough to get into this environment where it's, as Pauline Hanson has discovered, it's a filthy, disgusting environment, and dirty, where people stab you in the back. But they get a lot of the perks from being politicians. They get lifetime superannuation and backroom deals where they get kickbacks, and the corruption is absolutely rife.
Well,
I
I
would
think
suggest that Australia's
people need to know that politicians get given water rights. They get given water rights as an entry into whatever platform or position they're taking up. And a lot of them then just sell them off overseas. But part of what they get when they enter into politics is some water rights. Here you go. And that's, I don't know what else there is. I do know that from a first-hand connection. But why? Why? But my question, I suppose, is, do a lot of them think they're doing the right thing?
No, not at all. I think if you want to talk about pandemics, the greatest virus ruining the world is greed.
Yeah.
They're greedy. I
Yes.
mean, I tend to think politicians are the type of people that were those little scroungy little kids at school that were sort of nasty and probably got picked on a fair bit. Look, I guess I'm being emotive about it. There are good politicians. There are politicians that enter the field and they want to try and change things for the better. They want to have a great Australia, but they very quickly find out it's all about deal making. They have to make deals. Pauline Hanson certainly wised up as a politician. She
Yes.
understands the game now that to gain power, to be able to make influences and changes, you've got to deal with the devil.
Yep.
Our
Yes.
politicians are a necessary evil. They run us because we allow ourselves to be run. Sometimes to our detriment, but I personally think they're liars, thieves, and they get away with the sort of stuff that would put you and me in jail, and
Well,
they must always be held
I
to
think
account.
during the lockdowns and even prior to that, but the lockdowns put the spotlight on it, that a lot of people realized. I mean, how many times do we have to see that they behave badly? How many times do we have to see that they cheat and they lie and they avoid a lot of things as well? We see it again and again and again, but people just put up with it.
I know we have to stop that. It's abhorrent to me that you've got organisations like VicGrid now forcing entry onto farmers' lands and then saying, "Oh well, we're going to put a power pylon here and a windmill." And the lie of the so-called clean and green renewables push is being exposed. I was very
Yes.
surprised to see Channel 7 come out with a spotlight report on China's influence over all of our mining and construction of wind turbines and battery farms. Using cobalt that's mined immorally in places like Kolwezi in Africa, where people are getting killed and children are getting buried under, collapsing mines, and it's supposedly clean and green, but they are destroying the environment. Even Brown got up there during that program and said they're about to start chewing into, arboreal Tasmanian forestry once again with a Chinese-owned mine. Look, our politicians have sold us out to foreign interests. And anyone who thinks that we don't have influences and ownership by countries such as China are deluding themselves. They're buying up vast tracts of our land, our natural resources, our gas is being sold off overseas. And then you've got our government saying new houses will no longer be able to have gas supplies.
Because we don't own the stuff anymore, so
Our gas. Our water, it's greed, and they're just selling us off. And there's obviously going to be kickbacks to that. Australia, in my opinion, is one of the most corrupt nations on earth. There's no accountability. Our politicians don't go to jail.
No,
They step down with a golden handshake. It's
for
got to
life,
change. I'm
for life.
a, I've gone on ranting and railing and moaning. Real change is needed, and we have to do that politically. I don't condone violence at all, but I do condone passive resistance. And if enough people resist, we can change. I do want the farmers to just get in their tractor convoys and block Canberra. We need to send very clear messages that it's time to take our country back. And I mean that equivocally. We need this, everything that we've lost, family, community, the values of private ownership, your freedoms. Your ability to say what you want to say, and certainly the ability to just, I want our politicians to go to jail if they do the wrong thing. They are corrupt thieves, and thieves go to jail.
Are we going to do it?
Well, a revolution.
Are we going to do it?
Well, I'm going to do my bit, and I certainly I can see a lot of people are starting to wake up, but nowhere near fast enough. Australia
No.
is a spear point of this new world order experiment, where they're starting to implement the notion of 15-minute cities,
Yes.
where everything you need is within 15 minutes. And then they'll sort of say, well, you can't drive there on this certain day. You have to stay within Australia's an open air prison. Certainly with the
Well,
Port Arthur, I discovered to my distress that in looking into the legal improprieties of that tragedy and the treatment of not only Martin Bryan in prison, I have credible reports from ex-guards that the confession that he provided, which was the only thing that saw him jailed for consecutive life terms, was tortured out of him deliberately under a protracted and sustained campaign of torture. And I don't mean mistreatment, I mean torture. And I have evidence of this from multiple guards and inmates. And I implemented formal civil inquiries to look into the abuse of human rights that we take for granted are protected under the United Nations. We don't have
No.
it. No less than six different government departments, the Attorney General, the Australian Human Rights Commission, Amnesty International, the Risdon Prison Primary Health Services Unit, and I was snowballed and stonewalled on every occasion. We have no rights. If you slip between the cracks in this country, you're in big trouble and
Right.
you have no recourse. So we're not a party. We're supposedly a party to United Nations conventions, but it doesn't work that way in real life.
And we saw that through the lockdowns and things that we had no human rights. There were none. There were none there at all.
Yeah, I remember, the world was shocked that our police were arresting and handcuffing pregnant women in front of their families because of Facebook posts they'd put. Obviously, we can see what's going on in the UK and Europe where, people are being jailed for Facebook posts. And some of them seem quite benign, in my opinion. This has to be fought tooth and nail. And I make no apologies. I'm very careful about what I say. I always say it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Yes.
So I'm always civil and respectful when I contact politicians. I'm waiting to hear back from the Deputy Premier, Guy Barnett, who's been obstructing and delaying my requests into the cessation of the coronial inquest that occurred into Port Arthur. And they just sort of fob you off and you just go, you have to respond very civilly and very formally. One thing a lot of people I caution is if you constantly bombard some politician in some hysterical emotive fashion, they can have you declared a fixated person. And if you're a fixated
Absolutely.
person, guess what?
Absolutely.
You can be
Yes.
involuntarily incarcerated in a mental institution.
Well, that's why we've got all these little recordings wherever you ring any corporation or government body saying that, watch your behavior because abusive or angry or whatever. When you keep hearing those statements all the time, that's trying to trigger you to actually react in a certain way so that as soon as you behave badly, it's an excuse for somebody not to have anything to do with you.
Yeah, control mechanisms, and once again, it's to make you think, oh, I've got to be careful what I say, otherwise, because they're recording.
Yes, yes,
You
yes.
know what I mean? Freedom. Yeah, it's a dream. It's a distant dream in some ways. I mean, I do think we do have a. It's a beautiful country. We do have a lot of things that a lot of other places of the world don't have. We certainly have a lavish lifestyle. We're bombarded with technology, culture, entertainment ad infinitum, and we do take a lot of that for granted. But it does seem to come at a cost sometimes. Even from a spiritual personal point of view, we replace what we should with shiny toys and the latest iPhones and selfies, as opposed to just connecting with people, where you would go down to an environment like the pub to see a live band or the big family community events you'd have where there were kids running everywhere. I want that back again.
Me
You
too.
know, it's not a regressive thing. It's a vital thing. Community, family. Do you know who your neighbor is? Do you help people? Do you say, come on, let's all get together? And, do you have friends other than the 1,000 friends you have on Facebook? And when do you see them? It's time to take a bit of a step back. and slow down.
We can create whatever we focus on, and we can create and contribute to the focus of the corruption and the theft and the fraud and everything that's going on out there, or we can focus on finding a solution and being the solution to that, can't we?
I agree. I think the focus has to be on solutions.
Yes.
If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So I do have, I espoused a new way of living at the Cosmic Conference consciousness, Cosmic Conscious Conference that I was invited to attend and speak
Oh,
on
you were
Port
there.
Arthur. And it was a notion of a new way of living where rather than joining this side or that side, left, right, gay, straight, black, white, that you self-empower and you
Yes.
don't try to change the whole world. You look at your strengths and you look at your weaknesses and you go, where am I strong? Now, where am I weak? And then you work on your weaknesses as a solution to self-empower, to make yourself more knowledgeable, more in control of that weakness. And you never stop, you never reach a plateau. You just constantly try to self-empower and you share that with yourself and your immediate circle of loved ones, your family, and your closest friends. You create a cell of self-empowered individuals, no matter what system you live under, whether you're in a dictatorship or a supposed democracy, you don't join a group, you self-empower. And if enough people did that, we think we do that. Oh, I'm going to make myself better. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to do this. Then a cell is something a little harder for governments to mess with.
Right.
And it doesn't just mean making more money and knowing how money works. It's how to make yourself healthier, how to spurn the machinations of big pharma and look at holistic ways of making yourself healthy. It's how to be spiritual, to understand a connection with the land and be able to enjoy that, to bring that into your life. If you've spent all your life sitting in front of a computer, when was the last time you went out in the bush and went on a camp? Just all of those things need to be brought back into your life, and you've got to self-empower on all levels, spiritual, financial, even defense-wise. Everyone should know how to defend themselves. We've got carjackings and home invasions, and people are just being told just be a victim. No, you need to know how to fight. Sun Tzu, The Art of War, says that when the world is at peace, a gentleman keeps his sword by his side. Need to be able to be strong, to have steel, but be benevolent warriors. And we need to self-empower and
And
forget
that
joining the
doesn't
group.
mean having a gun or a sword. That means also being a very good strategist.
Well, the most dangerous weapon on the planet is the human mind. And if that's deployed to any considerable extent, it can change the world. Osama bin Laden knew that.
And
So it's just, we've got to be powerful. We've got to have steel. We've got to have strength, spirit, and courage, and try and look to the light, but just help those immediate around us to be our children, our family, our friends, to go out into this big, bleak old world sometimes and be able to spit it in the eye and say, I'm here. That's what
I
you need to
love that.
do.
I love
It's
that.
hard. It's bloody hard, and I've got to practice more of what I preach, but I do the best I can.
Well, we've got 10 seconds to go, so that wraps it up actually really well. I love spit it in the eye, right?
Absolutely. That's what life is. Life is a fight and it's a battle. And just go out there as a peaceful warrior and fight. Fight for everything that you believe in, no matter what your beliefs are. That's your damn right.
Excellent. That's a great way to finish it off. Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your insight into the little areas of your life. I think you're doing a wonderful thing to bring, just bring the underbelly of this world out into the open and into the light so that we can all change.
Hope so.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Pleasure.
Bye.